the quartet of United fans right now. Myself, Dom, Victor, and Brandon Batchelor will join us in just a second. Second half of the People Show coming to you live from the Kintech Studio. The People Show brought to you by Applewood Mitsubishi. Mitsubishi's 10-year, 160,000-kilometer powertrain warranty is bold, but they have over 100 years to back it up. Details at Applewood Mitsubishi in the Richmond Auto Mall. Let's connect here with Brendan Batchelor. Batch, how are you? Singing along on the phone line there?
Yeah, we drew Burnley. I'm fired up. Let's go.
It's a positive result, man. Can't go broke making a profit.
Or breaking even, I guess, in this case.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. 1 point is 1 point. Nevertheless, we'll talk about that later. Man, game five. Are you pumped up for tomorrow? It's an elimination game, man.
Yeah, it's a big opportunity for a Canucks team that I thought through the first 57 minutes of the game yesterday anyway looked a bit battered and bruised and tired and kind of like they were running out of answers. And then all of a sudden, in a flurry, they found all of the answers, and now they put themselves in a really good spot here to try and close out the Predators on home ice, avoid that long flight back to Nashville for a potential Game 6, and, you know, hopefully, if they can get it done, get some rest for some of their top guys who are clearly feeling what has been a very hard-fought and physical series, I think.
Okay, so you say 57 minutes, and yesterday, I think I would have agreed with you, and then, you know, divorced from the emotion in the moment of watching it yesterday, I felt like I didn't feel as frustrated watching the first two periods yesterday this morning. And I think the third period was so bad that after the game, I think a lot of us felt like, oh, this game was terrible. But it was really just the third period that was so exceptionally bad.
Yeah, well, and I don't even know if I would go exceptionally bad because
the first 17 minutes
close. They kept it close.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not like the Forsberg goal, debatable kicked-in goal, shall we say, although I didn't really think it met the criteria for a distinct kicking motion. Like, you give up that goal in the first minute of the period, that could be a complete backbreaker, and it could cause you to unravel and start chasing the game, and then maybe you give up, you know, another goal and another goal after that, and suddenly the game gets out of hand. So while they didn't do anything inspiring in terms of trying to battle back in the game until they pulled the goaltender, they also didn't let it get out of reach. But I agree. I think it's that third period where you're thinking, okay, one goal game, they've got a chance here, they've just got to hang in it, and then the air goes out of the balloon right away when Forsberg scores early, and then the frustration of not seeing them really mount a push until it was almost too late, and, you know, what was it, 8 seconds later, and it would have been too late. That's the frustrating part. But, you know, I agree. I think through the first two periods, it was a relatively evenly contested game. And, you know, the Canucks, to me, overall, and I was saying this to Randeep as we were calling the third period, they just looked like a really tired team to me, a team that has sort of been through the ringer here. It's been a physical series. I think both teams have taken their pound of flesh to a certain degree, and they looked a little bit spent to me. So the fact they were able to pull it out of the hat is great, and now they can come back and try and ride the energy of the crowd tomorrow night at Rogers Arena. Although at the same time, with how hard fought this series has been, if you tell me that it's going back to Nashville for 6, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, it's kind of the sentiment from Talkit today, too, where he talked about like moving your feet quicker and thinking quicker. If there's physical or even mental fatigue that you're kind of describing here, that to me is like, it feels like Rick Talkit's already ahead of the curve on trying to solve that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's part of the reason why they had a complete team day off today, other than the couple guys that came in to do the media availability at Rogers Arena this morning. So they, you know, they're understanding that you're getting later into what has been a hard fought series. And, I sort of floated that I thought they looked pretty gassed yesterday on Twitter. And some people were saying, oh, it's only game four of the first round. If they look tired now, then they're in trouble. But I think this series has been unique in sort of the punishing style in which it's been played. And like, it's been very tight checking. Neither team is getting a lot in terms of shots on goal or scoring chances. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the Canucks set an NHL record for the fewest shots through the first four games of a series, and yet they're leading the series 3-1. So it just felt like a slog, like they were skating in quicksand a little bit. And so, yes, when Tockett talks about moving his feet, making quick decisions, these are the kinds of things that you weren't seeing from them, especially in the first 17 minutes of the third period, shall we say. And then it was really their skilled players that took over and made the difference after that.
It's weird too, because at 5-on-5, as much as we're talking about, like, yeah, they haven't shot enough, at 5-on-5 so far through the series, well, they've taken more attempts than the Predators. They've generated more high danger chances. This is all per natural stat trick. And the overall scoring chances, they lead in that. And so, like, I don't worry as much about the what the Predators are creating, because they haven't really overwhelmed the Canucks. And two of the goals yesterday were 4-on-4. And, you know, that can be chaos mode at the best of times. And at 5-on-5, I feel like the Canucks are more than holding their own. That's kind of the point that he talked about today, about the D-zone coverage, that they something that they always can fall back on.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I do think that Game 4 was the loosest game of the series for both
teams,
terms of some of that defensive structure. And that could just be sort of the war of attrition setting in that I'm alluding to, meaning that guys are making tired mistakes or, you know, aren't in the same spots that they would be if they were feeling 100%. But yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, again, like, you can hate the first 17 minutes of that third period, but you can't take away the fact that the Canucks didn't give up a whole lot really in that third period either. And they certainly didn't concede goals after the Forsberg one, which was an unfortunate bounce off a skate that, you know, in another universe might've been called back depending on the situation. So, you know, that is the thing. If you're tired, if you're making bad decisions with the puck, if you're struggling to generate offense, well, just fall back on that defensive structure, because if you have that, you will never be out of the game. And as long as you're in the game, you've got a chance to do something like they did yesterday. Now, that shouldn't be the game script, and that isn't the way you want to draw it up. But sometimes when you're in the heat of the battle, you've just got to do what you can do to get through that shift without it costing you. And, you know, pile some shifts together and hang around and see what happens. And, you know, ultimately we saw the skilled players can make the difference. So, you know, I think game state is a big factor of this too. Like, if the Canucks play that third period that way, but they're leading, then it's like 10 out of 10, no notes, that's great, because it's low event and you're trying to protect the lead. It was just frustrating because they needed the two goals and needed to chase. So, you know, the Canucks haven't really played with a lead very much in this series, but when they have, they have looked really good, and they've closed things down and made it hard on the Predators to create that offense. And we know, as much as, you know, the focus in Vancouver is going to be how much the Canucks aren't generating shots or how much they're struggling to create scoring chances, the Predators are having the same conversations and are talking about the same things with their top guys. So as long as you're holding them at bay, as long as you're, you know, falling back on that structure, then you've got a chance. And I think at this point in the series, that is a crucial edge, especially with the chaos that has ensued in the crease behind the defensive structure that's in front of Shelovs and DeSmith or Demko or Tolopilo or Sachenko or Batchelor or Nazar or Woodley or whoever ends up playing the rest of the way in this series.
Anyone but Sat. He doesn't have the knees to hold up for that. how great was that for Brock Besser yesterday? You know, and there have been moments, and I've echoed the same sentiments of, like, you know, not a dynamic enough player, and the Canucks need a little bit more juice in the top six. And while all that's true, that doesn't mean he can't thrive. And the player that I've always envisioned I want to see is having, like, a TJ Oshie-like impact. And I think, you know, back half career TJ Oshie, not front half, where he's a bit more, you know, fluid and flying up the wing. Like, the Washington Capitals version of TJ Oshie. And last night, like, that's the version I felt like I saw, where there he is in front of the net, causing carnage and turning in goals and pivotal moments. There was Brock Besser yesterday.
Yeah, and I think his presence at the net front is something that he has really sort of carved out as a hallmark of his game, not just in the game yesterday, but we've seen it from him throughout the series, right? Mm-hmm. He scored the power play goal that Miller set up for him in game 3, I believe it was.
His screen on the Miller goal, yeah.
Yeah, and a screen on the Miller goal too, right? So, like, he is a piece of business to be dealt with around that net, and we saw it especially on the game tying goal in terms of the composure he has in that moment, when his initial attempt has missed and hit the outside of the net, to get the puck, to settle it, to bring it to his forehand and find a way to tuck it into the goal. So I think we've seen a lot from Brock Besser this year. And you know what? Through the regular season, it was streaky at times. Like, he was really hot early and he went through some quieter stretches in the second half. But, you know, anytime you score 40 goals in this league, it means you're consistently putting yourself in situations to produce offense. And for him to have that kind of individual clutch performance in that sort of moment, where the series and the momentum in the series was kind of hanging in the balance, it shows that he's a gamer, shows that he's a big game player, and they're going to need him to have those kinds of performances going forward if they want to go on a deep run in this postseason. But you have to feel good for the guy because of everything he's endured in this market after his phenomenal rookie season and all of the injuries and the trade speculation and then the personal stuff with losing his father and all of those kinds of things. To have him come out on the other end of all of that and be the catalyst in one of the most memorable comebacks in Canucks history is really cool to see.
Talking to Brendan Batchelor here on The People's Show. You'll hear him tomorrow as well on the game broadcast, getting set for Game 5. Rick Tocchet was prompted about it today. If Casey DeSmith was 100%, is that who it's going to start? And he kind of gave a coy answer. We didn't really, you know, the classic non-answer answer. If it's in your hands, Batch, Game 5, who's your starter?
Yeah, well, the non-answer he gave was, I think, a pretty astute one, where he was asked if DeSmith is 100%, who plays? And yeah. He says, well, no one's ever 100% at this time of the year, which is true. So to me, it's all about risk versus reward. So I have no details on DeSmith's injury or the status or how serious it is or whether it could be aggravated. So that information would color my decision in the sense that if you are, you know, even moderately risking that Casey DeSmith plays and aggravates an injury to the point where he's going to miss, you know, a week or more, say, and you're putting him in the same situation as, you know, you're missing Demko and you're missing DeSmith week to week, then I don't think the risk is worth the reward in the sense of, you know, you still have three opportunities to close this series out. Yes, would it be extremely beneficial for you to win Game 5? Certainly it would. But is it worth doing that at the expense of losing to Smith for more? No, to me it's not. So this is also a non-answer. Like, I'm not giving you my clear 100% because we don't have all the information, but I would say if there's any doubt about DeSmith, and, you know, yeah, guys may be less than 100%, but with this specific injury, if there's any risk of him re-aggravating it, if he's still not feeling like he's at a level where you want him to play, then don't play him because you're going to need him in the second round, assuming that you can get through this series and Demko can't come back right away. And you may need him even beyond that if some of the reports about Demko's injury being even more serious than you know, some of the other reports we've heard end up being true. I don't want to risk saying, okay, Artie, it's all on you because DeSmith and Demko are out and you're going to have to carry the mail. So if it means going to Shelov's for another game, that's what I would do because I have confidence in him and the way that he played. But I think all things being equal, you would probably still go to Smith just because of the veteran experience and the know-how and, you know, the track record in the National Hockey League. But the fact that Shelov's has given you a game, has shown that he's capable of meeting this moment, means that, you know, if Demko is going to miss a long time, then you could consider a tandem approach. And especially if DeSmith is less than 100%, you do feel comfortable going to Shelov's if you have to, whether it's in Game 5 tomorrow or going forward into the next round or later in this series.
Boy, he looked pretty good, though. He looked pretty good last night. Again, it's kind of interesting right now because I was talking about this with Jamie earlier. There's really only two saves that I feel like a Canucks goalie stole one off the board, and it's the Beauvillier chance off of Demko in Game 1, early, and then the rebound chance there in Game 3. Actually, I think it may have been off Beauvillier as well, off the initial point shot, and then DeSmith is right on top of it. Like, Shelov yesterday, like, did everything he needed to do. He made one nice glove save on a O'Reilly chance, and that's, like, really about it. Like, the goaltending hasn't been, like, phenomenal, and they've stolen one so far through the series.
Yeah, no, it's the structure in front of them, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're talking about these grade A chances on one hand in terms of, like, you know, good saves for the Canuck goaltenders. Now, could you quibble with the goals? The Jankowski point shot is
sure,
tipped,
yep.
So probably not, although if it wasn't tipped and went straight in, I might have more of an issue with it. Could he have done more to prevent Josi getting the puck out front on the Forsberg goal? Maybe if he's not out as much at the top of his crease, he can get back to his post and make sure that that puck doesn't make its way across to Forsberg. But honestly, I'm nitpicking when I'm
sure,
talking
yeah.
about that. Like I thought Shelov's was great. I think DeSmith's been great. And I think it's a pretty cool situation that this team is in, where we're talking about the backup goaltender and the third string goaltender, and people have strong opinions either way on which guy should play. And I can see the merits of both sides of those arguments. So this is a team that will be confident in their ability to get the job done because of their defensive structure, regardless of which of those two guys go in. And then, you know, even in a hypothetical world where you have to go to Nikita Tolopilo, he's a big body. He's a guy that's built up a track record of pro hockey. He was one of the best netminders in the Swedish second division last year, and he's had a pretty good rookie season in Abbotsford in the AHL too. So, you know, I think we're all knocking on wood that that doesn't happen, because that would be the Canucks setting or tying an NHL record for the most goaltenders used in a single series if they have to go to Tolopilo. But, you know, the way this team plays and the structure that they rely on, it wouldn't surprise me if they still feel confident in their ability to get a result in a hypothetical world where Shelovs and DeSmith can't go.
We've been talking about all these positive moments and things, and the texts have still come in about Elias Pettersson and what to do with the lines. And Rick Tocchet even mentioned, like, it didn't feel like he wants to shuffle the chairs on the deck right now. As much as we talk about he's got to improve, it just feels like it's a Pettersson, Hoglander, Mikheyev job to solve the issue right now.
Well, but it is and it isn't, because that's the line in terms of the lineup card. But then you look at the minutes, mm-hmm. and Nils Höglander, I haven't checked today, but going into the game yesterday, he was averaging fewer minutes than anyone else on the team through the series. So even though he's on Pettersson's line, they're deploying Pettersson in a variety of ways and with a variety of players. So I wouldn't change anything.
He played 10 minutes yesterday, so I can't imagine that changed much more, because he played 8 and 7 the two games before.
Yeah, he was averaging under 9,
yeah,
for sure. So he's probably still the low man in terms of ice time. I don't think Mikheyev's ice time has been particularly high either, although I'm sure it's more than Höglander. So, like, I have no issues with the way they're deploying things right now, where, you know, that line isn't playing a lot together anyway, and they're getting other minutes for Pettersson and putting him out situationally. And that, to me, is all that Rick Tocchet can do right now in terms of deployment to try and get Pettersson going. And he's still out there in the vital moments. And he, you know, I think it's understated, because we talk about how great the Hughes play was on the tying goal, but I think Pettersson's sneaky little no-look pass to Miller to give Miller mm-hmm. a bit more time and room to get to the puck to the net is something that, you know, deserves a little bit more credit. And, you know, yeah, is he taking over games like we know he can? No, he's not. Is he producing at a level that we know he can? No, he's not. But they're winning the series anyway, and they're finding a way to get the job done with the way that things are deployed. And I can understand, when you've won 3 out of 4 games and it is such a tight checking, low scoring, low event series, that if I'm Rick Tocchet, I would be loath to change very much, because even if the underlying numbers and the shots and all of these things say that, you know, the Canucks have been lucky, they've found a way to get it done. And, you know, until that stops, or until the Predators really tilt the ice in a game, and, you know, I know the third period they controlled quite a lot yesterday, but, you know, it's never really felt like they are incredibly threatening in terms of breaking down the Canucks structure or generating chance after chance after chance, or you're really worried about Pettersson's situation. And also, we saw Andrew Brunette attack the Pettersson line with the O'Reilly line in the hard match, or a soft match at the very least, throughout most of yesterday's game. Well, guess what? You're back on home ice now, so you can shelter that Pettersson line. That matchup isn't something you have to worry about for game 5. So, you know, if you're taking it day by day and game by game, as this group likes to, then why would you change anything at the moment? Because you'll be able to get your matchups back. You'll likely be able to get the Miller line out against the McCarron line, if that's what you want. You'll be able to get Lindholm out against O'Reilly and try and negate those guys. And the Predators have shown that if you can do that, where else is their offense going to come from? It hasn't really, you know, materialized in this series. So as much as you'd love Pettersson to be producing, if you're preventing Nashville from producing and your top guys like Miller and Hughes and even a guy like Lindholm scores a big goal in overtime yesterday, had a big goal earlier in the series, they got offensive contributions from players like Zadorov, you know, that's all you're going to need to be able to beat this Nashville team if you can limit their offensive capability. So as much as the focus is on Pettersson, and in some ways, rightfully so, no one player is bigger than the team, and the team is getting results right now.
Batch, we thank you as always. Actually, we got a text in here from Mancunian Mike, who says, I was at the Berlin match. I just flew back from England yesterday. So the United fans are thriving right now in the inbox with you on the show.
Glory, glory. Let's go. Big FA Cup final coming up in a couple of weeks. Let's hope we can have a surprising result in that one.
That's what it all comes down to. Batch, we'll see you tomorrow at Game 5.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mick.
Brendan Batchelor here on The People's Show. Tomorrow, Game 5, him and Randeep Janda calling it. Will the handshakes come out? It's kind of been a sad first round in a way. I've really enjoyed the games. A lot of them are close. A lot of action. But the series right now, we got one sweep, all three ones, and then tonight, Vegas and Dallas, unless Dallas wins, it's the only 2-2 series right now. It feels a little underwhelming.
But, Bick, that Canes Islanders series is very close. That's not a 3-1 series.
You don't think?
No.
The
Canes, Islanders could be up in that series.
They're plucky. I feel like that one. Okay, over under. 2.5. Do you think we get 3 game sixes?
Sure. Optimistic Dom, taking the over.
I feel like...
And the Canucks will be one of them.
I was going to say, I feel like this is pessimistic Dom, not optimistic
Dom.
No,
it's veiled. It's veiled. It's veiled.
It's veiled.
It's a front.
It's veiled. Victor, 2.5 game sixes across the league?
I'm taking the under.
I think I'm taking the under, too. Yeah, I might even take the under at 1.5. I think we're getting one
this
game
six. This is
the six.
Stanley Cup playoffs.
I know. And that's what's so surprising. I don't see a way. I picked Winnipeg. I don't see a way back for them. Tampa, I think, is kind of on their edge. Tonight might be the last night. Are you banking on Toronto making a comeback?
No.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That's
not.
A lock,
exactly.
Baby.
So, like, I'm hard-pressed to see, like, which team is going to make a run here.
Tampa.
No, I
don't. And
I'm like,
and
I'm,
Islanders.
I'm less impressed by the Preds every game that goes by. They are.
That's a
very flawed.
That's a veteran team on the brink. Bick.
They are very flawed, and they have survived so far. But I said Preds in, or I said Canucks in 5, and once the Demko injury, I got a little shaken. Maybe said Canucks in 6, but. Still feel like it'll wrap up tomorrow. But we'll worry about tomorrow. We got to run. Sat, T.R. Shaw, Dan Riccio coming up the rest of the way. Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650. It's brought to you by Merit Kitchens. Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at meritkitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. Canucks Central on the way. Home with Canucks, Sportsnet 650.